Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is Terumah. It is Exodus chapter 25, starting at verse 1 to chapter 27, verse 19. The Haftarah is 1 Kings chapter 5, verse 12 to chapter 6, verse 13. And the Brit Hadashah is Matthew chapter 5, verses 33 to 37. And before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, who created the universe. Abba, we just thank you and praise you for your Shabbats and for your word that teaches us how to approach you. And I just pray that you would provide for everyone who is your people, who is keeping the Sabbath today, and that they would just be blessed. And Abba, I pray for their security all over the world, seeing what's coming on the earth. I just pray that you will bless all of your people with your peace. I ask in Yeshua's name. Amen. Well, last week, we learned exactly what the Mosaic Covenant was. It was those 10 categories of commandments in chapter 20, followed by what we call the judgments, the Mishpatim. In each one of those judgments or Mishpatim falls under one of those 10 categories. And I'm going to review that for you because this is relevant for this week's Torah portion for us to understand the connection between the 10 commandments, the Mishpatim, especially regarding the Hebrew servants, and what they are now being asked to do. And so I want to review that and explain that, you know, those first judgments, those having to do with the Hebrew servant, falls under the first of the Ten Commandments. You know, if you take any one of those Mishpatim or judgments, they will fall under one of the Ten Commandments. There are 10 categories, those Ten Commandments. See, that's the Constitution there. And the Constitution is an overarching grouping of behaviors or observances that the Lord wants from us, and the judgments or the Mishpatim fall under each one of those commandments or categories. The reason that this is related to this week's Torah portion is because he's going to test the Hebrew servants now. Now, how is it that the judgments regarding the Hebrew servants falls under one of those 10 commandments, and which commandment is it? Well, the Mishpatim, the Mishpat regarding the Hebrew servants falls under the Exodus 20 verse 2 scripture, which says, I am the Lord your God, which has brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You see, when a Hebrew servant goes into the house of a master, he is in bondage. And so what the Hebrew servant commands teaches us is how we are to treat our master and how our master is to treat us. Now, so Terumah is now a new chapter in this relationship between the Hebrew servants and the master. You see the connection now, right? There is a connection between us being the Hebrew servants. How did we get to be a Hebrew servant? Well, we said we will stay in your house. We will be your servants. Whatever you tell us, we will obey it. That's what they said before the covenant was made, and that's what they said at the end of the covenant, remember? So now you see that they are bond servants. See, he brought them out of Egypt, out of that bondage, but they willingly said, we are willing to be your bond servants, you know, because you brought us out of Egypt. Now you see how those commandments regarding the Hebrew servants relates to this chapter, and now it is that this Torah portion is going to put the children of Israel to the test. Let's go to verse 1 of chapter 25. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they bring me an offering of every man that gives it willingly with his heart, you shall take my offering. You see, what the Lord wants here is to see not only who will be, you know, obedient or, you know, just to love him or be loyal to him externally because, you know, they have to because now they're part of that nation called Israel and, well, this is what he said, so this is what we have to do. No, he wants to see who has a heart for him. So we're going to talk about this heart issue quite a bit in this Torah portion. There are two levels of love. And by the way, in the ancient Near East context, love had to do with loyalty. But there are two levels of loyalty, or two levels of love. There is the external loyalty that doesn't have so much affection with it. You know, this not connected. Your loyalty with, you know, your intellect is not connected so much with your heart. You know, you just don't feel it. You know what I mean? And then there is loyalty with affection. And of course, with affection comes gratitude. And affection, you know, should always lead to gratitude. So these instructions on the tabernacle are actually outside the purview of the formal Mosaic covenant, okay? But these are also instructions of a covenant with the children of Israel. Because once a king sets up a covenant with you, he can require that you continue to follow all of his other instructions that come afterwards, you see. And once you obey an instruction that your king gives you, the one that you've made covenant with, then that set of covenant, or that set of instructions becomes part of the covenant as well, by precedent. You've heard of that word called precedent? Well, the precedent is that somebody obeyed this instruction of the king, and now that becomes part of his overall law. Now, we have this again in Shoftim, which is in Deuteronomy 17, where he actually gives the priests and the judges the authority to create additional instructions to the people that become part of the overall law, that attach themselves to the original covenant. So when people say things like, well, you're not supposed to add to the Torah, this instruction of the covenant or of the tabernacle is in addition to the Mosaic covenant. See, the king has the right to instruct you to do something, and you set a precedent by obeying it. Now it gets attached to the covenant. Do you see what I'm saying? And then later on, when the king authorizes other people to act on his behalf, the priests and the judges, their instructions get attached to the original covenant. So this is why we need to understand this situation here and understand that what the Lord is doing is putting the Hebrews to the test now. He's going to ask them to obey further instructions, and when they do that, then they, impute that instruction then to us. to continue that instruction. We don't go back to just those instructions from Exodus 20 to the end of Exodus 24 and say, we're not going to obey anything else, do we? No, we continue to, you know, go through the instructions that all of the Hebrews throughout the last 3,500 years have set precedents for, because they've been instructed to by the king or by the priests and the judges and so forth and so on. Okay, so now we are going to take a look at the reason for him to give this instruction, and he tells us the reason for this additional instruction, which is in Exodus 25, verse 8. He says, let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell in their midst. Now, you know, one of the things that Yeshua told his disciples is that he would make a place for us, right? And that place for us is, you know, when he returns, he's going to gather us back to his place, which is the land of Israel, and there will be many dwelling places there. But the caveat to that is that we first have to make a place for him in the tabernacle of our hearts. So the tabernacle instructions here were given to Moses immediately after the children of Israel received the Mishpatim judgments, for two reasons. One, I've already told you, was to test their hearts, and the second reason was for their security. We know that the tabernacle, and in particular the ark, moved with them as they went through the wilderness. And so for these two reasons, the children of Israel were given this instruction. It teaches us that if we do what the Lord tells us, that we will be protected as we walk in our wilderness as well. So the Lord gives the instruction for the building of his tabernacle. And he starts with the instruction on building the ark. Now let's go to chapter 25 and look at this here. It says in verse 25 of 16, and you shall put into the ark of the testimony. So he is telling them that there's an ark of the testimony and that there's a purpose for the ark of the testimony. And he has given a pattern for the tabernacle. And in verse 10, it says to make the ark, and the ark of the testimony is to house the testimony, which is the covenant that the children of Israel made with the Lord through Moses. So we now have the very first thing that's being built is the ark, which seems kind of strange, doesn't it? Because the ark is the Lord's seat. And most of the time, what you do before you buy a chair is you get a house. You get a house, then you get the furniture. And so there's something different going on here, because the understanding of the ark is that it's to hold the testimony. It's to hold the intent of our Hebrew heart. It's to hold the intent of our forebears who stood at Mount Sinai and said, whatever you say, we will obey. So let's take a look at the Hebrew understanding of the heart. You know, we in the West think that the heart has only to do with our emotional state. But in the Hebrew understanding, the heart is everything. The heart is the totality of the person. In most particularly, it is the inner self, the personality even. But it also is your intellect. It is your memory. It is your desire. It is even your courage. Your heart equals your courage. And least of all, it is your emotions, because emotions are easily swayed. You have to first be convinced in your heart, the intellect, so that your heart, the emotions, can be swayed and convinced, you see. So in the Hebrew context, the heart is your mind, and it includes all your thoughts, including your emotions. And so, you know, we are told to love the Lord with all our heart, right? And with all our mind and with all our strength. And so we understand that our heart and our mind and our strength all go together. But here we have the Lord, he's building the seat because our heart goes into the seat. You know, you have to have the heart first. Now, the Torah begins with the Beit and ends with the Lamed. Now, Beit is the first letter of the word for a house, and Lamed is the first letter of Lev, which means heart. But I want to show you something else about this, because Beit and Lamed also spell Baal. And this is kind of the reason why I think we all get a little bit confused. You know, Westerners read backwards in Hebrew. In Hebrew, you read right to left, but we Westerners read left to right. So left to right, Beit Lamed has to do with Baal. But from the Hebrew perspective, it has to do with Lev, the heart of the house, you see. So the ark is first to be built because his seat has our heart testimony in it, and his seat is going to be in the heart of his house, the tabernacle, and the heart, again, representing the intellect and the affection. So Jehovah is going to rule us with his intellect and which is his heart or his innermost place from the tabernacle. And he is asking his Hebrew servants now to accept this additional instruction on exactly how to build this place where he will dwell among them. So he's going to dwell among them with his heart. Do you see? And that's why he wants our heart to be toward him. So this Torah portion, Terumah, is about, it's about a lot of things, but one of the things that it's about is the Hebrew servant's heart and intellect toward Jehovah, and the Lord's heart and intellect toward his servants. Now let's go to Exodus chapter 26, verse 4. And I want to talk about this. It says, "You shall make loops of blue upon the edge of the one curtain from the selvage in the coupling, and likewise you shall make in the outermost edge of another curtain in the coupling of the second." So what is this? Well, if you looked at it, you might think that it was some kind of tzitzit or on the tabernacle, or perhaps a tallit. Those words, therefore, loops, are actually lulah. And they literally mean, a loop that attaches a curtain, you know, with hooks, right? So the lulaa are not the same thing as fringes that we wear or tzitzit on our garments, except for two important details: the placement and the color of blue. See, that color of blue there is going to be that word tekelet, and that is that same color of blue in our tzitzit, and they get placed on the selvage edges. And, you know, someone has postulated that if you looked at that from the air, it would also look like a huppah, which would be a constant reminder of the marriage covenant for which we are now getting a house built where the bridegroom can now live among his people. But not only among them physically like he will in the millennium, but that he wants them to live in his heart and for him to live in their heart. Now, this offering that he's asking for seems kind of strange if you just do a superficial reading of the Bible and you read this and you think, well, there they are, they're out there wandering around in the desert with nothing. But if you go back and realize that they plundered Egypt when they came out, you'll realize that they actually came out of there with silver, jewels, gold, and with clothing, as it says in Exodus chapter 12, 35. So what the Lord is asking them to do in building his home is for them to give him some of those resources that he provided for them when he was doing all of that great work in Egypt and changing the minds of the Egyptians, and they were able to get all these things. He now wants them to show him who has the heart to just say, you know, these things all belong to you. Just go ahead and take them. Who is going to be enamored with their booty, with their, what they plundered out of Egypt, with their silver and gold and jewels and their clothing? Who's going to make that more important than building his house? This is part of why he asks for these offerings, which are to reveal their heart toward him. You know, he wants to know, what are you going to give up to me that you brought out of Egypt? You see, in verses 3 and 4, it says, and this is the offering which you shall take of them, gold, silver, and brass, and blue, and purple, and scarlet, and fine linen, and goat's hair. Now, this goat's hair thing kind of confuses people a little bit. Goat's hair is very important in our forefathers' lives. Goat's hair was what Jacob used when he went to Isaac and said, you know, I'm Esau. And so why would the Lord want a she-goat's hair on the tabernacle? Because that's in this verse here, that's what it is that he's asking for, A's, which is Strong's 5795. A's is a she-goat, and he's asking for the she-goat's hair. Well, you know, that she-goat is, that word comes from Strong's 8163, which is Sa'ir, which has to do with the shaggy goat or the he-goat, which we know is Esau. And so, why would the Lord want to put a goat's hair on the tabernacle? Because that seems to be something that is associated with Esau. Esau was Seir. He was shaggy. He was red. He is associated with the he-goat all through the scripture. Well, I believe that the Lord did that because Esau represents the rebellious spirit in us. I think when the Lord was having the children of Israel build the tabernacle, he already knew that they had a rebellious spirit in them, and that he was going to use that as a reminder to them that, you know, I know what kind of people you are. And so he puts everything in this sanctuary that reminds him of us and him. This tabernacle is built of the combination of us and him. Now, this might seem like, you know, doesn't make sense. But remember, this covenant is like a marriage. And when two people get married, you get the attributes of both of them, don't you? So on this house comes then the knowledge and the reminder to the children of Israel that the Lord knows about their rebellious spirit. In verse 8 and 9, he says, "And let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them according to all that I show you after the pattern of the tabernacle." Wait a minute. Let's stop right here, because the Lord is telling Moses that there is a pattern of the tabernacle. Well, if there's a pattern of the tabernacle, then there has to be a tabernacle. But wait, the tabernacle has not been built yet. Excuse me, but the tabernacle had been built. The tabernacle exists in the heavens, where Yeshua is and where the Father is. We learn this in the book of Hebrews. The pattern was always there. Now he's bringing the pattern to the earth and asking the children of Israel to make this tabernacle after the pattern of the one that pre-existed this one. You see? And the pattern of all the instruments. So this also, these instruments existed prior to the children of Israel making these instruments to be in the earthly tabernacle. These exist also in the heavenly tabernacle. So this tabernacle is not just something that the Lord, you know, willy-nilly decided to just go ahead and let me make a place for me to dwell there. He is actually, this is going to be his home as well as the one in the heavens. You know what it shows us? It shows us that he is able to dwell on the earth and in the heavens at the same time. Doesn't that kind of answer your question about how it is that Yeshua the Son could be on the earth at the same time as the Father is in the heaven? If the Lord is Echad, you know, we have this argument that, well, you know, the Yeshua can't be who he says he is because, you know, he was here on the earth, therefore he can't be God, right? Wrong. He can exist on the earth and in the heaven at the same time, just like the tabernacle can exist on the earth and in the heavens at the same time. Oh, by the way, the tabernacle doesn't exist right now, neither does the temple, but it does exist still in the heavens. You see, the earth is secondary to the heavens. Now, the earth is going to become central as a place where the Lord dwells. But the Lord is never going to give up his heavenly temple, is he? Or his heavenly tabernacle. He's always going to have both. So he can dwell in both places simultaneously. I don't know why it's so hard for people to wrap their heads around that concept. I guess it's because we humans can't really do that. But we do kind of do it in a way. When your body is sitting in your chair at work, but your mind is on the beach in Rio de Janeiro, you know, you're kind of in two places at once, right? I mean, that's kind of a not great example of how that could work. But the fact of the matter is that with the Lord, it does work. It is manifest. He can manifest anywhere he wants to. And this pattern of the tabernacle shows us that, you know, that this tabernacle on the earth was the same, after the same pattern as the one in the heavenlies. And so therefore, when he was here, he was also there too, you see. So now we have him saying here, make me a table of showbread. And in verse 25:30, he says, "And you shall set up the table of showbread before me always." And so the table of showbread is very important because it has to do with there being 12 tribes. Now, these breads, these 12 breads that were put on the altar every week, on the seventh day, on Shabbat, were probably unleavened. That is the state that the Lord would have us to always be in, because leaven represents false doctrine. It represents things that get into our lives that make us go astray. And so, because no honey, no leavening agents, none of that was allowed to be near the altar, they were most likely unleavened bread. And like I just said, it was always replaced on Sabbath, and that was shown to us in Leviticus chapter 24, verse 8. So on the Sabbath day, they would go in and replace this bread, and in fact, it would have been baked on that day. This is prophetic of the 12 tribes and the members in those tribes being refreshed on the seventh day. You see, that bread is baked fresh on the seventh day, replaced on the showbread table. It's the day of replacement of the and the refreshment of the 12 tribes. And by the way, it is said that this bread was as fresh on the seventh day, on the day of its replacement, as it was on the week before, all during the week, that it never went stale. If you are unleavened, and you are, being refreshed every Sabbath day, then you will never be stale. There will never be any spiritual problem in you. Now, that might sound like I'm being a little bit harsh, but you know, we all have a tendency to fall short of the Lord's standard, right? And so we need to be aware that the Sabbath is very important, and it was very important in the keeping of the tabernacle as well. This showbread and the ceremonies that were to be done in there having to do with the Sabbath day. So let's remember that if we start to feel a little stale in our walk, let's start to take a look at first, are we having joy in our Sabbath? Or is our Sabbath kind of stale? Are we experiencing peace and quiet having a good time on the Sabbath and getting rested? So always remember to renew your delight in the Sabbath and to keep out the leaven, that those false doctrines that stand in the way of you enjoying your walk with the Lord and your keeping of the Sabbath. Because this bread here represents that you are on the table of showbread in the tabernacle. Now, there is so much to learn in this Torah portion about this topic of the tabernacle, and I hope that what I've brought to you, the insights that I've put forward this time, have been uplifting to you and have inspired you to learn more. I have, in previous years, done a lot of work in these teachings, and so there's additional material at themessianicmessage.com for this Terumah Torah portion. So I hope that this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.